Welcome to our second episode this week. It's 189 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest Insight Scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by Warren Sites and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, joining from my home in Isla Mirada, Florida. And joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sahaj. Let's get started with my first topic. And I want to talk about T-Mobile and their announcement to partner with Delta to reimagine their network operations using 5G. So for T-Mobile for Business, working with airline carriers is nothing new. I know your favorite carrier, Alaska, has been working with T-Mobile for the last couple of years, Anshul, but this deal it's pretty big from my perspective. So not only are 60,000 line with Delta's employees moving over to T-Mobile, but T-Mobile is also going to deploy a 5G hybrid network at their Atlanta headquarters. And from my perspective, reading through the press release, this is all about driving better customer experience for frequent flyers like you and I, and improving Delta's overall operational infrastructure. This is going to involve flight attendants, airport customer service, ground crews leveraging 5G at the various hubs that Delta operates within, pilots eventually using the power of 5G, I'm assuming there's a lot of manual things that occur with logbooks and maintenance and that sort of thing. Not a lot of specifics there, but I would expect that would be one of the use cases. And certainly last but not least, enhancing that overall lounge experience. In the press release, they talk about Delta Sky Club Ambassador will gain certain advantages from 5G connectivity. And so all in all, it seems to me that T-Mobile for Business is fairly focused on the airline industry. There's been a lot of good that I think has come from their relationship with Alaska. And I was thinking that's probably one of the reasons why Delta wanted to roll with T-Mobile. But what are your thoughts?
You covered it great. No notes. I will say, I think the Alaska partnership did help them create a solution for Delta. This feels like a very encompassing solution. And this might be a net positive for T-Mobile users at Atlanta Hartsfield, because Delta's, for a fact, they did talk about Hartsfield, but that's Atlanta's main base of operations. It's also the number one biggest airport and most busiest airport in the world. So this is going to be quite the undertaking for T-Mobile, because I know for a fact they're going to have to upgrade the airport. They're not going to talk about it, but I'm sure that they're working with the airport to upgrade the infrastructure so that there is good enough coverage everywhere at the airport, because they already talked about the lounge and flight attendants. All of that has to be empowered by the network. I think T-Mobile customers at Hartsfield are going to be getting a much better experience. And I think this is like a net positive for everybody. Pilots are going to have more up-to-date data. Everybody's going to have a better experience. Delta has really shown to themselves to be a very progressive airline. They were just recently upgraded their planes, a lot of their new planes, with 4K screens on their planes, which is unheard of right now. Some airlines are just doing away with screens like Alaska has. But I really do think that this is a net win for T-Mobile. And it's going to make T-Mobile's users happier too, because the infrastructure is going to be better at that airport. And all of the airports that Delta is probably have pretty big hubs at. So it's probably going to be Minnesota too. So I think that's another thing to think about. But in general, this is cool. I'm interested to see how they deploy this new network infrastructure at headquarters, because it sounds like it might be a private 5G deployment. They're not really calling it that, but it sounds like that's what it might be. But overall, you nailed it. I think this is a really interesting case, and it clearly feels like Alaska's partnership helped them to this point.
I think so too. And you make a couple of really great points. Number one, the need to improve the overall infrastructure within airport locations. AT&T has recently worked with DFW Airport, which I think DFW Airport holds the claim of the largest airport as far as square mileage. It has its own zip code. It's a hub for America, and I fly through Dallas quite frequently. You bring up Hartsfield, they are the busiest airport in the world, so there's a lot of data that's flowing back and forth. So I think it's going to be really super interesting to see how 5G really improves the overall operations for Delta, and in general, for the busiest airport in the world as well. But with that, let's go to your first topic. And you want to talk about a promotion at Google that has an impact on its AI efforts.
Yeah, so the reason why we're talking about this is because Google is such a heavy influence on Android and the entire 5G ecosystem of smartphones. And what's happening is Rick Osterloh, who used to head up their hardware division, he is now taking over and merging on his 8th anniversary with the company. Apparently it's exactly today. So it sounds like maybe this was like a promotion, planned promotion. They're merging Android with all of their hardware efforts. And the former head of Android, Croman, from Hiroshi Lockheimer, is being put on other projects inside of Google and Alphabet. So that's a sign that he's probably getting sent out to pasture. But it is interesting because this is purely being motivated by AI and what Google wants to do and accomplish with AI, which requires them to both be competent on software and hardware and do those things together. Because in a lot of situations, Pixel team wants to do something, but if the Android team doesn't want to enable it, it's not happening. Now they are one. And I think that's going to actually be a net positive for Google, but also potentially other OEMs as well, because there will be a lot more understanding between what the Android ecosystem can do, what's possible on the phone, and what's needed. And things that Osterloh has been with Google for 8 years now, and I feel like they clearly made a decision that he is the new head of the division, but they basically needed somebody to bring these two together, and so that will be a faster ascension of AI on device. So this is really about AI on device and making this thing work faster and better. But yeah, it's really good to see that they're joining these efforts together, and I think this is a net positive for everyone. And it was interesting, was Rick, actually the reason why I even heard about it was because Rick Osterloh tweeted out on Twitter that he is really happy to his quote words are excited to take on this new challenge and accelerate AI innovation across the Android ecosystem. I look forward to working with Cristiano Amon and his team and increasing our strategic collaboration with Qualcomm and Snapdragon for Android, not just in mobile, but across compute, XR, and auto. So that's really interesting because Qualcomm is a chip vendor and they supply most of the Android ecosystem with the help of MediaTek as well. But it's really interesting that he doesn't mention MediaTek, but he does mention Qualcomm, which is, it's very interesting politics. But nevertheless, it's really interesting to see where this will go. Clearly, Google wants more control, but it also sounds like they very much understand Qualcomm's role in making Android successful. So
yeah,
I think there's a lot, we're going to see a lot happening at Google I.O. next month. So expect some of this convergence to occur there as well. Maybe we'll see Snapdragon X Elite Pixelbooks or Snapdragon X Elite cars going places where maybe Google doesn't want to build their own chips and will rely on someone else for AI performance and 5G.
Yeah, it makes sense. All of the big, you know, players, including NVIDIA and Microsoft, are talking about a platform approach to AI. And the definition of a platform is hardware and software. This makes perfect sense from my perspective, bringing the Android OS together with the necessary hardware to enable next generation AI features on smartphones. I don't know if, or in devices in general, tablets, whatnot, 5G PCs. I don't know if you caught the news, but there was some very opaque discussion from Huawei at their analyst summit that's going on around how they're going to leverage AI. But again, yes, not a lot of specifics. Do you have any color there before we go to my second topic?
No, but I do want to see. I think we'll have to wait until the Mate 70 ships to get a better idea. Because you're like, Mate 70, okay, we'll wait till the Mate 70. But this isn't one of my topics, but I quickly wanted to add it to the list of things. I talked about it earlier in the week. Micron got another CHIPS Act investment. They got $6.1 billion. So we now have Intel, we have Samsung, we have TSMC, and we have Micron. All four now have been given significant investments by the U.S. government to build foundries and fabs in the U.S.
Yeah, Micron provides a lot of the world's supply of main memory modules. So that makes perfect sense. And we got a lot of, I think, positive feedback after we posted the podcast. There was some nice dialogue going on around the CHIPS Act, what that could really do to propel the U.S. and domesticate the production. And I brought up Semitech, which was originally, you know, based in Austin. And I think now it's on the East Coast. I think it's in New York now. But there's a lot of goodness going there. So I'm glad you provided that update. I want to say last week, but it was Tuesday, right? Because
it was literally 2 days ago.
Yeah, we're doing two podcasts this week. So I forget. But hey, let me go to my second topic. And this is something you and I caught. So our buddy Mike Dano at Light Reading wrote about 5G dynamic spectrum sharing and how it is riding off into the sunset in the United States. And DSS is something that you and I have talked about for many years in a more efficient way to manage spectrum. Initially, it was used by AT&T when it began rolling out its 5G networks and it was having to manage spectrum sharing with 4G. I didn't know this, but in reading the article, T-Mobile never adopted DSS. So I don't know where I missed that memo, Verizon to a lesser extent, but it's finally being sunsetted. And I think the consensus is that although it was an important element initially in deploying networks, it's just no longer necessary, right? Just given kind of the nature of where things stand today. But I know you can go pretty deep on this topic. What's your take on all this? Is this something that you were expecting to see?
Oh, you betcha.
Yeah, figure.
I knew this was going to happen because the truth is DSS was always a Band-Aid. It wasn't a good Band-Aid. It was a Band-Aid. And that Band-Aid was mostly deployed by Verizon so that they could claim better coverage. To your point, AT&T did deploy it at a very short period of time. Once they had a spectrum, they longer needed it.
And it was only, for AT&T, it was only low band.
Yeah, which is the purpose of DSS for low band. The reason why you do DSS is because you don't have much spectrum. So you have
exactly.
to.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the reason why you would do it in the low band is so that you can claim better coverage. It's like it should be used with more spectrum so that the user experience is not degraded, but it's generally used for lower spectrum, which makes the experience worse, but allows you to claim better coverage. So it's really, it's not being used the way it should be, but it's being used in a way to promote marketing. And that's why when all the networks are deployed with mid-band and the coverage is good, DSS isn't needed anymore.
It's irrelevant, right? And I do remember there was one podcast where we were talking about DSS and Verizon, and they were wrecking their up and down, right?
People were rightfully being advised to disable 5G.
Yeah.
So the way I look at it is DSS was a Band-Aid. We can move on from it. I think it hurt Verizon more than it helped. Perfectly honest, there's a reason why it's going away.
All right.
And I think I predicted it, what exactly happened as it has.
You probably did. So adios, muchachos. So, hey, let's go to your second topic. You want to talk about Samsung networks and Qualcomm and hitting a 10.4 QAN milestone.
So this one came over the wire yesterday. We've actually had quite a busy week this week with announcements. So we haven't really had a shortage of topics to talk about here. But basically, this was a Samsung Networks announcement with Qualcomm. They were able to use their network infrastructure and their vRAN. So it was a combination of network radios and vRAN with Qualcomm's test devices using 3GPP Release 17 specifications. And they were able to deliver 1024 QAM both on FDD and TDD spectrum bands, which is an industry first for FDD. And that actually allowed them to increase downlink speeds by over 20%. So they're able to really get more juice out of the same spectrum with this increased modulation. And they said that they were able to get 485 megabits per second with 20 megahertz of bandwidth. And that's 20% higher than what they were doing with 256 QAM. This is on a Snapdragon X75, so it's not even the latest. X80 is the latest, but it's probably the latest that they could get their hands on. And they were doing this in 2.1 gigahertz FDD and 3.5 gigahertz TDD. Yeah, it's really cool to see that they're doing this in both types of spectrum. They're doing this for downlink and uplink, and they're able to show a considerable improvement in network performance without needing more spectrum. This is a net positive for everyone. Maybe if you don't have Samsung vRAN and radios, you can't really leverage this, but this is a good marketing thing for Samsung networks. People say, hey, we're doing 1024 QAM regardless of what spectrum you're using. Mostly mid-band, and that you can really squeeze more out of your 20 megahertz blocks that you have. And if you increase that, multiply that 20 megahertz by, let's say, 5x, 100 megahertz, that's potentially 0.8 gigs. Actually, no, that's wrong. That's not 10x. That's 5x. Could be getting 2.5 gigs potentially. They didn't test that. Maybe the equipment's not ready yet for that. But you could think down the road that maybe aggregating some spectrum with 1024 QAM could be very powerful. So I'm excited about it. It's a great announcement. I moved 5G forward in the right direction.
I agree. No, I think the performance profile is quite impressive. Hey, let's go to my third and final, and I'm going to do a double shot of T-Mobile for our second this week. And I want to talk about the company, in particular T-Mobile for Business, increasing its bench strength in the CMO position. So industry veteran Mo Katibeth will be joining T-Mobile for Business. And you and I have known Mo for many years. I got to know Mo when he was at AT&T for over 20 years. He's just a solid guy, quality guy, super smart. He's recently coming from RingCentral, where he served as president and CEO, a fairly short-lived stint. I think it was right at about 2 years. But RingCentral is an interesting company that has been going through its own evolution of sorts. And actually, I didn't know this until I dug in to the news around Mo joining T-Mobile and leaving RingCentral, that the former CEO, Tarek at HPE, became the CEO of RingCentral late last year. So lots of changes at RingCentral, but I think this is a super strong hire for T-Mobile. They're continuing to build their enterprise service organization. Mo brings a lot of experience there, a lot of creativity. So I think it's gonna be a great thing for T-Mobile for Business. And I bet you think the same thing.
Yeah, he also ran AT&T's business segment. Like, he's literally the right person for the job.
Yeah.
I also knew him from AT&T. I don't really think there's a better person. I would say he's not on T-Mobile's bench. I would say he's on T-Mobile's starter squad. Yeah. Because
no, he's not riding the bench. He's strengthening the bench, right? Yes. But he's definitely an A player.
So. Yeah. So I think they made the right hire here. I'm really interested to see where this goes. He's also really like out there kind of leader. So he's going to definitely promote their visibility a lot more for business. And I think he's probably even the right kind of person in terms of having the right balance of experience and energy and public visibility. I think he's a stellar hire and they've done a great job, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, should be interesting. Let's go hit your third and final. And you want to talk about Moto's new Edge 50 Ultra on the Samsung A35 lot.
Yeah, so the A35 is Samsung's latest mainstream phone. It's an entry-level product. I think it's already been launched in other parts of the world, but this is the first time it's launching in the U.S. Same with the Moto Edge 50 Ultra. This is basically just a cost-down model. And yeah, it's, as somebody who's tried to use the full spectrum of the Samsung range, I struggle with the bottom end because AT&T let me use the A15. And honestly, I can't recommend it to anyone. I would just get a refurbished phone at that point from a higher end. But the A35 might actually be the perfect price range because it's $399. So it's not really like a junk phone, but it's going to allow you to not have a really loss of experience like you would at these lower end devices. I like the A35. I think it's probably the bottom of where Samsung should really be going. And then with the Edge 50, that's actually like a high-end phone. This is like their top end, and they're actually growing in the top end of the market right now. So they have the Edge 50 Ultra, Edge 50 Pro, and Edge 50 Fusion. And Edge 50 series is like how they top out, but the Ultra is the best model that they have. So it's the Moto AI. It has connectivity for Moto Buds. It does have IP68 water protection, top end quality. The thing that really, I think, excited a lot of people is you can get the Ultra, Edge 50 Ultra, with a wooden, not a case, but the back plate of the phone is wooden. So you can get that kind of nice natural feel to it, which I think is really cool because that's something that they did in the past with the Moto series a long time ago. And it also comes in vegan leather or a special pearl finish. But I think people are most interested in the wooden frame. And it also charging 125-watt wired charging, 4,500 milliamp hour battery. So it's a decent sized battery. And it even works on Verizon's network. This is running a new processor from Qualcomm. It's the Snapdragon 8S Gen 3, which is like a slight step below the 8 Gen 3, so it's like a slightly more affordable processor. So it probably falls somewhere between the 8 Gen 3 and the 8 Gen 2 in terms of performance. But it's a more accessible chipset. So we'll see what the performance is like. I haven't seen any benchmarks yet, but that seems like a really good phone for somebody and likes choice. And that's really the core of this, is that we're seeing more choice being brought to the market. And I think we're going to see more budget phones available and maybe even more refurbished phones. Hint, hint, wink, wink, we might be seeing something soon. But yeah, I just think that there's the smartphone market's getting a little bit more competitive. And hopefully with the FTC bearing down on Apple, they might be a little bit more friendly towards competition in the US market, which we desperately need.
Yeah, I like Moto's sort of design take on a lot of things. I remember a very modular phone. It came out 3-4 plus years ago, and you could attach like a speaker to it, a high-end like Hasselblad kind of camera. And so I think it's interesting that they're experimenting with different finishes, like you said, the vegan leather and the wood. I recall Asus doing a line of notebook computers that incorporated bamboo on the display lid and that sort of thing. So yeah, some nice features, some nice differentiation. And to your point, this is sitting in not the lowest part of the market, right? But kind of at that value price point, and bringing some really nice design elements along with them.
Yeah, so they offer phones, this Edge 50 line, it starts to high end and works its way down.
Yeah.
Other phones for more, even more affordable price points. But yeah, cool. They're really offering more options, which is good.
Yeah, awesome. We got through two this week, so I think we're all caught up. I'm well over my cold now, thank goodness. But it's been another great podcast this week. My friend, why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone would like to provide insights for a specific 5G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will is at Willtown and I'm at Ancho Sog. We hope you have a great weekend, and please tune in again next week. And don't forget to rate us and subscribe.